Hi, and welcome to this first in the series of transitions. We're going to be listening to Greg's journey today. Now, I first met Greg about 15 years ago, and at the time, he was a deputy head teacher at a group of SEND schools in Buckinghamshire. And in addition to teaching art, he'd started to get an interest in some digital learning, digital training. So let's dive into a conversation and hear how that began the journey that Greg's been on. So, Greg, welcome. I'm so incredibly excited because this is my first ever podcast that I've invited somebody to. And I'm really pleased it's you, because you were probably also the first person that I noticed this thing about transitions that I'm so interested in. I'm incredibly privileged to have you here in the first one, and looking forward.
I'm delighted you asked, and I think our journey for a few years now has been quite an interesting one. So I'm looking forward to sort of seeing how I can. It's just interesting. Even before we started, I was thinking, I wonder what we're going to talk about. And I thought, well, we're going to talk about edge gain, hopefully.
Well, we're certainly going to talk about edge gain, and we're going to, the whole series is about transitions, changes. And rather than give the sort of end away at the beginning, we don't want to be like a Columbo.
Exactly.
They always start with a murder in mind. Just give me a bit of background about Greg and edge gain, where you are today.
Okay, so I the only thing I really know how to do properly is teach. So I'm teacher for 20 years, art and design teacher in state education in the UK, in England. I started experimenting with digital media pretty much. Couldn't quite believe that it wasn't happening in schools, just not so much from a geeky interest. There's certainly a level of geek that is interesting to me now, but from an engagement interest, had a lot of students who weren't that interested in being at school, and I found that doing digital things, it did two things really. It helped them engage with what we're doing, but it also kind of maybe gave them some skills that meant they could get jobs or whatever. So I was always interested in developing that. Got involved sort of more by luck than judgment with Adobe, and before that Macromedia, so some of the big tech companies, and ended up probably 20 years ago, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago in San Francisco, talking about the work we were doing with young people in Chalfont St. Peter in Buckinghamshire, just outside London, and was showing off the various animations and videos and things that we were creating. I hadn't realized it was sort of, we were doing some pretty cutting edge work. Adobe really liked it and offered us an opportunity to work with them and develop some on-demand courses that really just sort of flew. I think we had, tens of thousands of educators globally enlisted at the beginning. It was all free to play, and couldn't do teaching and business, so ended up starting a business called Edge Gain. And I think we're nearly 15 years old, and I think, to be honest, Tim, you were in through the door within the first 6 months.
Well, never wanting to miss an opportunity, particularly at the time. But now, when I talk to you from time to time and interact, it's a very much an established business, which you've been able to achieve. And what's that delivering to you personally? We were beginning to talk about, you just had this really in-depth conversation this afternoon with tax advisors and the like. This is such a long way away from a teacher.
Don't forget, I've got a fine art film and video degree. They did not teach us about tax. That was one thing that wasn't on the curriculum. I think what has been really interesting transitioning from school, where, you know, I would get my paycheck and it was never as much as I'd liked it to be, but we sort of survived and had good summers and never felt, you know, knew we were doing a good job. And my wife was a teacher and my sister's a teacher and everyone else I think I know is a teacher. Transitioning into work, into running my own business, was pretty scary. I think I didn't really even know what an invoice was when we started. So there was a huge amount of learning to do. And I quite loved the fact that it was completely on my terms. I also realized very quickly nothing was on my terms. It was all on my client's terms. So I think there's that brilliant paradox between, well, yeah, I can do whatever I want. However, I can't, because if I want to get paid, we need to get this out the door by the time they need it. So I think there was a lot of there was a huge amount of change. And I think what your question, what does it do for me now? I hate to say it, I spend probably more time doing things that I'm not very good at, but I think that need to be done to run a business. We're a small group. We're five full-time employees, and then probably about 30 or 40 what we call associates, who are all trainers or teachers or professors across the world, mainly in the US. So making sure everyone is feeling loved, and I should think if you went and asked everybody, they're not all feeling loved all the time, but making sure that folks are connected and know what's going on and know what's coming and know what we're doing is really important. But I think the bit that keeps me coming in every morning is that every day is different. Every day there's some kind of challenge that I have to figure out. I can't ask, I'll often try and pass it off onto someone, but that doesn't work. It's not fair. And it's me having to figure things out continually. And whether that be about contracts or about whether we're looking at setting up a US business at the moment, all those sorts of things. It's problem solving. And I think I see myself as a very creative person. I thought that was because I was interested in art and design, but actually I think creativity has got nothing to do with it. Well, sometimes it's to do with art and design. I think it's to do with it's solving problems. I think the fundamental thing that I really enjoy are solving problems. And I think I used to solve 30 students' problems every hour, and their problems were called learning. And I think that's what got me really interested in teaching, was that I got that opportunity. Again, didn't realize that at the time. I thought it was just a good thing to do. I think it all comes back to problem solving.
Yeah, fabulous. And you're quite modest in what you're sharing, because I know a little bit more about some of the detail. You are broadcasting quite often around the globe. You mentioned, I think, 10,000 of potential students, whether they be end users, teachers or the like. These have all been communities that you've interacted with over the years. You said mainly US, but I know we've been talking a bit about other parts of the globe as well this year and last year.
Yeah, I think it is a bit of a privilege to work in education. We're working both within schools, but also within higher ed, within universities. It has mainly been focused in the US, and I've really enjoyed. I'll tell you what, there's no difference in the schools and the teachers and the complaints and the joys and the wins and, and all the things for anywhere I've been. It's mainly been US, bit of Europe. At the moment, we're doing a big program sort of across Europe in universities, which again, very exciting to be involved in that. Slightly feel deflated that my Spanish, my French, my whatever's isn't up to actually delivering, but I'll be there supporting. So yeah, I think we've also worked with huge communities, and we've developed and built huge communities of learning. And I think it's always a shame when it comes to an end. But all these things, you know, they all will change and adjust and sort of get reborn. And I have to say, when I sort of, you know, sit back after work at night, I think, wouldn't it be great to just have like a thing that you don't have to do anything to or change or tweak or whatever, and it just keeps selling. You know, you just keep selling like a nice can of beans. But I don't think that exists. I think the other thing I learned very early on about teaching and learning or learning is that it's really messy, and nothing is the same each week. It's never quite the same. However you deliver it, it can always be improved. And I think we've done a lot of that. I take it for granted now. We've just finished, I don't know, about 2 or 3 months ago, we finished a big online virtual sort of conference over a number of days, teaching teachers from all over. I think we did a US leg, it was like US time zones and then European time zones and then Australian time zones. And of course, you can't be involved in all parts of everything, but just to come back into the office in the morning and see really nice comments from people that have learned cool new things that they're going to take back to their students it still really fascinates me. I still sometimes, if we've got their IP addresses, I will go and I'm not stalking them, but I'll go and I think, blimey, look, that lady, she's in the middle of an island that I've never even heard of in Greece somewhere. You know, that's like, how brilliant. So, yeah, I think we were lucky with the timing, the technology, the sort of virtual technologies that at the very beginning we threw ourselves into. You know, like this, like you're somewhere in Berkshire, I think. I'm somewhere in Hertfordshire, but we could be anywhere. And those sorts of technologies were new. And I think that was very exciting. I sort of almost take it for, I think we all take it for granted now that we can, we can have these conversations. And I think the key thing that we were doing back then was exploring and experimenting and pushing the boundaries of what can you do online and what works online, what works in person, what works on demand, etc. And I think I figured out some of those, but not all of those.
So, look, it's a fabulous story, but I want to take you back to probably just before we met, because I did come in at the sort of time when you probably decided that something was going to change. But what was evoking that the year or two before that?
So I've been teaching nearly 20 years. I was just shy of my 20th year of teaching. 10 years of that, I've been in the classroom, which I loved. I still miss now, but I have a very rose-tinted memory of that. I don't remember any of the problems or the clearing up or the meetings or the emails or all those things that drive teachers nuts. And after that 10 years, I got into the leadership of school leadership, became a, I don't know what I became, a leader. I just got more jobs. I think that's what they called it. Here's more jobs, do more things, earn a bit more money. I actually think there was a moment, there was a threshold moment where I wasn't given the job, the principal job, the head teacher job, but I was asked if I'd take on the job. And I thought, yeah, if I wanted that job, I could probably get that job. And at the same time, I'd been, tinkering around the edges of Edgegain. We'd set up the business. We had, by the way, Tim, I don't know if you ever knew this, I'd never planned to set up a business. I couldn't get paid unless I had a limited company. That was the only reason I set Edgegain up, was that we'd done a gig for Adobe and they couldn't pay me into a personal account. They had to pay me into a business account. And so I had like 48 hours of running around Googling what's a business. How do you do that? The company name I wanted, which was ridiculous and I can't remember what it was, wasn't available. And we thought, oh yeah, we're helping people gain the edge gain. We made it up in 10 minutes and it stuck, and it's not bad. Still think it's all right. But yeah, that threshold moment was when I was asked, well, go away, come back tomorrow and tell me, whether you're going to go for it or not, for that job. And I walked the dog and I thought, blimey, if I do this, if I go for that job, which I was very tempted to go for, because that's what I thought I was going to do, that's what I will do. I will do that. And then I will retire when I'm 65 or whatever, if I make it that long. And that'll be it. That's what I'll have done. And that'll be a great thing. And then I thought, but I could set up a business that has unlimited possibilities. And I don't really know. And that's terrifying, because at that stage of my life, I had a huge mortgage. I had three children. Yeah, scary.
Wow, yeah. And but somewhere in you, from within you, you took that bait, if you like, what for want of a better description.
Yeah, and I think I look back at it now, and I think it was a no-brainer. I think it was more of the decision to take that risk was about excitement, and it was quite egotistical as well. It was like, I can do
Yeah.
this. I can. There's it. There's. I haven't had to prove anything to anyone, I'm pleased to say, but it was sort of proving it to me. It was like I've done teaching as well as I can do it. I've enjoyed being part of a school, not worrying about paying, I mean, paying taxes, or, you know, you get your paycheck, you don't even think about it. It's like the nearest I got to knowing how financially solvent we were was towards the end of the month when you couldn't get money out of the bank. It was that sort of, you
Yeah.
know, oh, we get paid next week, so we're just, you know, it was that sort of thing. And I think it was a case of, can I make a meaningful existence out of this if it pays the bills? That was for certainly the first 2 years, 3 years, then great. And then if I can get a salary out of it, we've never borrowed any money, so you know, I'm very pleased that we've I say we, because I think I went alone and did it. And here's a funny thing, when you used to come along in those initial days to support me and sort of point me in the right direction. I was sort of sitting in the office on my own. I was really lonely. It was really, really was it really was like, oh my God, I've been surrounded by not just teachers asking me questions every 6 minutes of my life, but 30 children asking me, you know, there's a you are the center of their universe for 50 minutes before they go off and find somebody else who they're, you know, you are the be all and end all of those classes, which is why it's so exhausting. But then to suddenly be in an office on my own with a laptop or whatever I had at the time, I can't remember, was just a case of, this is, you know, this isn't what I expected. No one's, there's no one to talk to. So that changed, but you know, for a year or two there, it was very exciting. It was very, running and running as fast as I could at it to make things. And I don't think, I still don't think we've very, in all the time we've existed, I think it's very rare that we would say no to some sort of job offer. And I think it came from that first couple of years where it was just like, whatever it is, we'll say yes, because we needed to get some money in the bank.
So the driving here, because what I'm hearing is that there are some constants that you got into teaching because that was giving a way of people being able to do something, create stuff, if creativity is the correct word, but they were doing, having, getting some skills. And actually the community that you were teaching were sense special education needs, so these aren't always necessarily kids that can't learn, they just decide that they'd prefer not to, but there's some
It
quite
wasn't always
challenges.
that. It was mainstream for the first part
Okay.
of it. It's mainstream. And of course, there's a lot of those students in there. And I was always really interested in the students. Not interested. I saw them as a greater challenge. These are the kids who don't necessarily want to be here for, you know, I was very
Yeah.
lucky. I went to the local, wasn't even comprehensive in Bucks. We've got the apartheid system of the 12 plus or 11 plus, I think now, but 12 plus. So I was at the other 90%. I didn't get to go to the grammar school. But I would be in, I saw those students as, you know, they're the ones that don't want to be in the class. So it was my job to make sure they wanted to be in the class. But I did, you're quite right. I did spend a chunk of time towards the end of my career in alternative provision where, let's just say kindly, the students were there because they hadn't been asked to go back to their other schools.
Yeah.
And
But
it
equally,
fascinated
you
me.
then shared a brilliant story with me a year or so ago where one of the guys, now a very successful person, came to you and said, "Sorry, I was such a pain."
Yeah.
But they'd
Yeah, I
actually
mean
taken some of this.
he's a lovely kid. He was the most challenged. I can remember sitting with staff talking about this lad. We won't name him, but I'm sure he knows who he is if he ever tunes into this. who was just the most difficult teenager. I mean, teenagers, you know, by that is their DNA, isn't it? Be difficult. And he was the most challenging of them all. But we somehow got him through sick form by the skin of his teeth. God knows how we got him through. He got a grade. He got a grade. And with that grade, he put in a last minute, I think, application to Ravensbourne, which is a very prestigious, it's always been a very prestigious sort of art design school, but that's focused on film, video, broadcast, radio, etc. And he got a place there doing broadcast media, I think. And I don't know what position he's got now, but he's certainly spent the last 10 years zooming around the world doing Formula One and every sporting convention that I can think of. He's been there, and he's in the background making sure all the broadcast works. And I think we're still in touch. I'm like, it's great. I see him every now and then, and he always sort of says, "Yeah, it was a close call, wasn't it?" I think, yeah.
But
You don't quite know how close it was.
equally, you're sharing those similar stories now with some of the folk, albeit you're cyber-stalking through their IP addresses and seeing how they're using some of this. So there's some continuity
Completely. I
within
mean,
this.
yeah, it was students in the early days, it's teachers now. And I think the thing about working with teachers or trainers or professors or educators is that they have a greater reach because they are reaching all those students. So I sort of see that as a sort of that's a way of reaching more people. I part of me really misses that personal classroom human activity that I think schools are very, very good at, and that a lot of teachers are very, very good at. I miss that a lot, actually. Maybe that's what I should do, Tim, for the last bit of my career. I'll head back
Well,
to school.
that's fabulous because it then comes on to the final question, really. And it's been brilliant listening to this journey. So what next?
Well, I'm the forever optimist. I think we haven't cracked America. We've done a huge amount of work for Adobe in America. I think last year we taught 15,000 teachers. I didn't teach them all, but our organization and the people that we're, lucky enough to work with did. I think there's a bigger piece of work to do there. And that's really about, digital technical skills that are going to give people employability options. And that is such a that I mean that world at the moment is changing so quickly with the advent of generative AI and all the different contenders for which tech companies are going to come out on top and things. So I think the next part of what I want to do is we create a lot of on-demand courses, and I've always thought they're really good. I haven't spent enough time marketing or selling them. We've always broken even on our courses on an annual base, but we've just spent, I think, 2 or 3 months this over the summer really trying to kind of fine-tune them. And I think the next part will be how do we actually get these into the hands of students? How do we get teachers to take these seriously to sort of further develop skills at a kind of slightly deeper level? I'm very honest about the fact that if I teach 30 people online for an hour, there is only so much that will achieve. Whereas we're sort of, thinking, can we go deeper? And then the other part of what's sort of slowly opening up now is we're about to start a tour of Europe for higher education, going to lots of art and design schools across Europe. On behalf of Adobe, which is another privilege to be able to travel and work. And I think that might open up a few other doors as well. So I mean, who knows, Tim? This time next year, I'll be able to tell you about that. But there's it's nonstop, and there is a sometimes I just think I wish there were five of me because I can only do so much. So
But we've still got the entrepreneurial spirit from the sound of that, still looking for
Oh,
the
completely. Yeah.
opportunities.
Yeah. And I have to say, I think one of your questions at the beginning was about like, what's the driver? Getting that contract. It's a great buzz when that comes through because you are having to kind of work. Every contract is slightly different. Every customer is slightly different. And as I said, I'd love to have one thing that was just like, we just keep selling it. But unfortunately, learning's not like that. Everybody wants it slightly different. And I sort of, I don't know, I feel like when I'm having those conversations, I know enough about what we do because I've done it inside out and backwards. Or I know somebody. And again, another great thing is working with other brilliant people who are probably much, much better at a lot of this than I am, and sort of keep me kind of in the middle of it all. And that's good as well because I can't know it all. I know how to teach, but yeah, I need really good people around me, and yeah, been lucky enough to find a whole bunch of those in the last 15 years or so.
So, very, very final question. If we were have some way that you and I were walking down maybe a corridor at your old school, and we were going back 20, 25 years, and we bumped into the younger Greg, what would be the conversation you'd have?
I think I wore some pretty awful suits back then. So I'd probably be saying, don't worry about the suits. You won't have to wear suits forever. That was always a problem. It's a great question. I think, yeah, I don't know if I ever, this was never a plan. This has been literally make it up as I go along year on year. There's been, I mean, you and I have had plans. Remarkably, some of them look like that little bit of paper you drew in my office about 12, 15 years ago. And I'm like, man, I think that guy can see into the future. It was never a plan. It was never a plan. I think teaching and learning wasn't really a plan. It was something I was lucky enough in Barcelona to be an English teacher for a little bit, and I loved it. I just loved the class. It was like somewhere like performance, but without being on a stage. It was great, and it still is. It's still the same thing. Doing a sales pitch, it's the same thing. It's the same kind of the energy. And as I said right at the beginning, it all comes back to problem solving for me. It's and when I find other people that solve problems really, really well, I want to work with those people. I think that's what I'd be saying. Trust in your ability to solve problems. Don't worry that you're in a school. It'll work out.
Brilliant. Greg, it's always a pleasure to talk. We could go on for ages, but and the restrictions of podcasting and people's attention spans, etc. So we'll break off there. But look, it's been a pleasure talking to you this afternoon, and long may we keep problem solving.
Yeah, and Tim, thank you for your input. It's been that initial phase when we were meeting every other week or however long it was so informative and helpful because there were things that in the week I could just store up and say, Tim will know the answer to this. And often you did. And if you didn't, you had a sensible way of kind of approaching it. And over the years, we kind of drip fed back in and out of those things. And it's been extremely valuable, and I'm forever grateful.
Stay safe, and we'll catch up soon.
Excellent.
So, what did I take from that conversation? Well, firstly, we had Greg, who'd followed from perhaps a background or a culture of coming from teachers, going into teaching, enjoying that occupation, that vocation. He was able to use his ability in art and design, creativity, to provide some skills that may support students having left school, go into the world and use that creativity to earn a living. And that was serving well. However, he spoke about a pivotal moment when he had the opportunity to become a head teacher. This is probably something that must be within the ambitious areas, areas of ambition, something that teachers perhaps crave for. But we found that this had been a pivotal moment for Greg where he thought, well, okay, I could take that route, but that would lead me to 25, 65 and pension age. And maybe that's not the route, but I could set up a business. And what had been happening prior to that decision period, that pivotal period, is something had been bubbling inside him around, in this instance, digital creativity. And we probably need to think about the zeitgeist, the period that this happened, around about 2010, 2008, 2008, 2010. And digital skills were becoming more and more prominent. So he was able to take this and mold it into the business that Edgegain has become. But it was interesting to see what he's carried forward, because at the heart, what he loves to do, there are some values, some character strengths, some virtues, things that are important. So at the heart of this was his ability to solve problems, the love of the chase he also mentioned about, the love of working with people, and how isolation had not been a thing that he was used to. So he's been able to bring all of those into his new way of working, into the company that he now runs. And I think this is built on values. It was built on things that are important, which is probably what has made this so successful for him in terms of a transition. But interestingly, there's also emerging some thoughts. Is this still going to serve him well going forward? And it was interesting that he shared how he misses the one-to-one, the intimacy of training and development. His aim within Edgegain and his aim within what he's providing as a way of transferable skills. He's been able to successfully do that in depth, in width, by training trainers. His reach has far exceeded the ability on a one-to-one basis, but he shared how that actually was becoming important, and it will be interesting to see how that pans out. What will be interesting is what are the things that was observed within this interaction, within this journey, that come up again in subsequent podcasts. So to stay tuned, listen to some of the others as they become available, and let's see whether there's any recurring themes, recurring features that have made others that go through this transition, through this journey, successful. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to seeing you at the or hearing from you in the next podcast.